Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free t-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand. You said you love me, and that's a fact. And then you left me, said you felt trapped. Well, some things you can't explain away. But the heartaches in me still this day. And stand by me.
We're back at the races, about 20 into hour two. A terrific 40 minutes with Joe Applebaum, and utilizing his breeding hat from his business Off the Hook that does pin hooking and breeds and races and sells a little everything. And Joe's going to be a buyer at the sale Saturday and Sunday. The catalog, I mentioned, you know, a lot of the first crop sires. There's also some that were not represented that at the open sale. Mr. Speaker, there's a Mr. Speaker colt, 506. There's three Caracantes that are in the sale as well. There's four Fast Annas. So some of there's a few more Byrons. You know, Byron had a very good two hips go through, 200 and 600. And there's five Byrons for Hill and Dale. A little everything. More, a few more Lees. There was only one Lee that sold Monday, Tuesday. And there's, of course, the filly that Mrs. Nielsen talked about. Tony Black is joining us. And one thing I didn't do with Tony last week, I didn't get a chance to note how many Philadelphia-based outfits, beside the horse we talked about, Collegeville Girl, Richie Vega, it really, Tony, been a nice, steady parade of Philadelphia-based operations that have come to town and done well and run well. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. And all those sales are too rich for my blood. But it really is rewarding to see some of these Philadelphia-based people shipping into New York and, you know, and putting incredible performances. It kind of helps to elevate the mood or mentality or the thought of what horses are stabled in Pennsylvania. And you know what? When you talk about Pennsylvania and horses that are stable in Pennsylvania, the one thing that the Racehorse Development Fund has done and really done well is to elevate the Pennsylvania bred horse. They are a respectable breed. And I'm not just saying the Pennsylvania breds are what's coming to New York, because of course there are horses that are stable in parks from all over, that are breeds from all over. But the Pennsylvania bred with the Racehorse Development Fund has elevated the quality of those individuals. And it really, you know, when you see the people talking about the Racehorse Development Fund and how it's, you know, it's not being utilized the way it should be utilized, and, you know, it's a waste of money, and the politicians have different ways of speaking about it depending on which side they're on. The Racehorse Development Fund has elevated the sport. It makes the Pennsylvania bred competitive any place in the country, and that's why I hate to hear these people that have negative things to say about what gaming has done for racing in Pennsylvania and what it's supposed to have done and what they said it hasn't done. It hasn't made better the quality of racing. And yes, it has. You know, managements have to do their share to make, you know, to promote racing. But the Racehorse Development Fund has done what it's supposed to do. You know, when it comes to owners of racetracks, they're the ones who are supposed to go out there and advertise and elevate the quality and the attendance and everything that they can do. But the players, we are certainly benefiting from the Racehorse Development Fund. And what sport do the players have the responsibility of totally, you know?
Interesting,
what,
yeah.
What sport do the players have to, burden the responsibility of elevating the quality of that sport? It's not the players' responsibility. It's the management's and the owners of the racetrack's responsibility. But PA breds are a credible breed, and horses shipping out of Pennsylvania have been doing well, and I'm proud to say I even get on a few of them, like Collegeville Girl, who is, you know, a respectable New York bred. And I think she'll be running up there in another few weeks.
She's going to come back, huh?
Yes. I'm not sure exactly where. They said there's a New York bred stake for her. I'd like to see them run some conditions and give her the experience and seasoning that you need before you hook that caliber of horse. But she's a respectable New York bred, and she did what we thought she could do when she won first time out. You know, you see a lot of horses that show a lot in the morning that don't always go over there in the afternoon and put a stellar performance in, because their inexperience takes over, and you're throwing a lot of new scenarios at a horse that's just been training in the morning, and then you bring them over there in the afternoon. But when they do go over there and do what you expect of them, it certainly is rewarding. And you know what? Not to say betting on a horse that pays $20 isn't a big deal, but more than that, the mental reward is tremendous. When you say, man, I know this horse can run. Now all she has to do is go over there and prove it. And then they do that, makes you renew your confidence in what you've done for all these years, get on and off of horses and have an opinion. And if your opinion's right 70% of the time, you know what? That's good. That's real good, because in this business, as in so many other businesses, you hope to be right half the time, and sometimes you're not even right half the time. But if you can be right 60, 70% of the time, you're going to be successful in the horse racing business.
Tony, you said something that has got a natural for a follow-up, and that is horses that show talent in the morning and doesn't even have to be maidens and first-time, second-time starters. This can be true of horses that have got more experience. What's the checklist that when you're working with a trainer to try to get a horse to perform in the afternoon the way they perform in the morning?
Well, one of the most important part of that checklist is the mental abilities and capabilities of that individual. There's a lot of talented individuals that go over there, and the anxiety that they may have to succumb to, you know, takes away from their overall performance. Anxiety is a very important part of any athletic event, whether it be human or animal. You know, it can eat you up, it can utilize your energy, waste your energy, and then when it comes time to perform, there's nothing left. So that's part of the checklist. And, of course, you want to make sure that a horse is in good order, no nagging ailments. You know, there's a lot of things that can be detrimental to a horse's performance. The obvious ones, of course, does he have some physical problem? You know, is there something that's bugging him? But then there are little ailments that don't always show up and aren't always obvious, especially if it comes to where a horse gets its power from, in behind. You know, little nagging aches and pains can cause a horse not to go over there and a lot of times and perform at its best. And a lot of times the only one who can kind of have a little insight to those aches and pains are the little guy or the guy getting on their back, where they see, you know what, this horse is traveling all right, but when he goes to change leads, you know, he's a little bit uncomfortable for that particular instantaneous change of stride. When he jogs off, you know, especially if it's in behind, you know, a horse that maybe a stifle's a little bit bugging them, and they slip a little bit, and their foot will slip out from under him, and it won't be real obvious. You say, ah, that's the racetrack. No, but the guy that gets on him that has experience with that horse on a daily basis says, no, this horse doesn't have a tendency to slip like that. It's not the racetrack. He did it a couple times. It could be a stifle. It could be a little nagging muscular problem in behind. It could be just something that will be detrimental to the overall performance and the overall maximum performance that a horse would like to see be able to happen. But the other thing, one of the things that's so very important. How's the horse breathing? You know, he might not have any problems, but there might be something that's changed a little bit with his breathing. He might have some mucus, some buildup, some allergy that's causing mucus buildup. He might have something that's changing, that's causing his breathing not to be 100%, or the beginning of an entrapment of an epiglottis, or something that's involving, you know, their air intake. And a lot of times, they don't show themselves to the man who's on the ground watching them go, you know. But the guy that's on their back, a lot of times say, no, this horse, you know what, he never took a deep breath, or he seemed like he wasn't breathing as comfortably as he usually does, or he blew his head out a bunch of times like there's something that's bugging him a little bit. Maybe it's allergies. You know, horses have allergies. People have allergies. Mucus builds up. Or you could say something that's coming up, like a little cough or something, you know. Boy, this horse, when he went to exert himself, he was blowing his head out and coughing and coughing. And then by the time you turn him around and he's back by where the man's standing, you know, he's clear and you don't hear nothing. So the guy on their back can really have a good insight to the different things that you should be aware of that change in a horse that can be detrimental to their overall performance. That's why exercise boys are so important, that they communicate with trainers. And jocks, it's so important they communicate with trainers. And a lot of times they're hesitant, because as soon as you have something negative to say, you know, they'll say, you put it in your mind, well, this guy, as soon as I say something that's negative, he's going to say, man, you always got something to say about this. You know how many times that came back to me? Oh, you always have something negative to say, or you always have something to say, you know, that, and then, you know what happens, eventually you come back and you speak the truth and you don't whitewash it or just BS the guy because you want to ride some other horses for him. Eventually, you know, when you do come back and you have something to say and it shows up in the afternoon, then all of a sudden they have a different attitude and they say, you know what, Black gave me some insight to that. Next time, maybe I'll listen a little closer. You know, and it's not, oh, well, he's just always got something to say. And that's the rapport I've had with so many of the trainers that I rode for and had success for over the years, where they had confidence in what you had to say. And you know what? It's important that a jock or a rider has confidence in the man that he's riding for. You know, confidence builds great relationships when you have it in each other. And winners build confidence in everybody, whether it's trainers, owners, or jockeys. Winners really build confidence.
You make me think to ask another follow-up, actually, because we've seen a couple of horses, and we've got a much different environment in recent years at the gate and pre-race than there used to be. And you know, there was for many years, a difficulty when it came to riders going to the gate and letting, you know, a supervisory veterinarian know that they don't like the way a horse is warming up. That's gotten a much better reception in an environment where it's actually become encouraged. If you don't, you know, if you don't like the way a horse is warming up, you may have to explain it to a trainer later, but you don't have to explain it to the veterinarian. I mean, they're trusting riders' judgment. Talk to that, Tony. Getting to the gate and being concerned that the horse is just, whether it might be first time on a horse and you might not know the horse, that makes it difficult. But talk about that, because we've, you know, every couple of days there's a horse that, you know, is a gate scratch, and people should know what that environment and that exchange is like with track vets.
Yeah, it's so important that riders have a good understanding of that, track vets have an understanding of it, and, you know, you've got to understand this with a young rider on a horse's back, and he's on a horse, and he doesn't like the way the horse is going. And I talk to young riders about this. They listen. Number one, it's not going to do you any good to go out there and just gallop them around there, and you're hesitant and you're fearful in the way this horse travels. I says, make the horse obvious to the vet that's on the gate. You know, if you think he's jogging a little bit off, make sure you're jogging near that vet on the gate. And I talk to vets about this also, and I say, you know, it doesn't do anybody any good for a kid to leave the gate, wrap up, and, like, have his heart in his mouth, hoping that this son of a gun doesn't break down. So I tell the kids, listen, if you really have a question about this, and the vets will back you up, take them over to the vet, you know. And, you know, if the horse is, the vets aren't going to usually question you, unless they have an awfully good understanding of who that horse is, and they've been out there in the morning, and they've watched him, you know, and he's got a little funny way of going. They're not going to second guess you. Number one, if something would happen during the race and they said he's all right and he broke down, you know, there's liability and there's all kinds of complications with that scenario. They're going to scratch him. If you worried about the man saying, oh, man, you know, you got no heart, you're chicken, you know, whatever, you know, the trainer, that horse is all right, and you haven't had any experience with that horse, and you don't know if he's all right. Number one, the trainer should have had some experience with a horse that has a little hitch in his giddy-up, and then you'll have confidence in him in the afternoon. But you go out there, and you, when you come back, best thing I can tell you to do, and this is what I tell these young riders, son, tell the trainer, listen, the horse was going in a questionable manner. The vet called me over, and he scratched the horse. to be safe and to give everybody an opportunity to perform, battle another day. But the vet called me over and he scratched ours. I had a racing secretary go in the jocks room and make a speech about horses, and it was after Jose Flores succumbed to his injuries. And he went in there, "You guys don't like the way these horses are going. You just take them over there and scratch them." You know what? I was in the business for quite a few years. You didn't just use that attitude. "Well, I don't like the way he's going. I'm taking him over there and scratching him." You go and you use this scenario. It works a lot better. "Yeah, I didn't like the way the horse was going. The vet called me over and he scratched him. And that's the way we'll leave it." And you know what? It works a lot better than me going back and saying, "Now, listen, after years went by, I'd go back and I only scratched a handful of horses in my whole 34,000 mounts." But I could go back and say, "Listen, this horse wasn't moving right today. I had experience with him in the past. Didn't like the way it was going. Scratched him." But a young kid can't do that. They haven't been sitting in the saddle for 45, 50 years like I did. There was a lot different mentality when I came back and said it, and then when some young kid came back and said it, especially if it's a kid that just lost the bug or ridden a few hundred winners. Can't do that. But it's to everybody's benefit, I know people get disappointed when horses are scratched, but it's a lot better to be disappointed that day than to gallop them around there and not give the betting public a fair shot of winning, or maybe galloping him around there and just aggravating whatever's ailment or nagging ailment or whatever ailment he has that day. It's a lot better to let's just put a line through it and wait for another day. And if a trainer does have a horse, listen, I had a horse one day, Doc Penny called me over to the gate. And this was at Keystone or Philadelphia Park, and I had a good relationship with Doc Penny. And he says, "Hey, Tone, that horse is going a little funky." He says, "You all right with him or not?" And I says, "Yeah, Doc, I know this horse. I've been on him several times." And this was the benefit of having experience with the horse in the morning. So, he says, "Well, if you don't like the way it's going, just tell me." I says, "No, he's all right." Well, the horse left the gate, he won. And Doc Penny and me used to laugh about it. He says, "You want me to scratch any more winners on you?" I says, "No, but the difference is I had experience. I had experience on that horse, Doc. But any other time you call me over and you don't like the way one's going and I have no experience with that horse, believe me, don't hesitate to scratch him, Doc." And, that's a relationship you build with vets after years and years of being a jockey. And it's a mutual respect that veterinarians have for you or you have for them. But it's a real touchy subject, jockey scratching horses, and you might want to ride some better ones for the guy. But the one thing a jockey, you don't want to get labeled. "Oh, that's some gun. He doesn't have any heart. Boy, he's chicken shit." Plain and simple. That's the way they put it. You don't want to get labeled like that because you won't be in business long. Right? So it's a tough business, but there are ways of handling those situations.
Tony, you bring up a number of good points, particularly somebody that feels that something's amiss but goes ahead and takes a horse around without trying, and that that'll drive connections completely crazy. I mean, a guy comes back and says, "Something felt amiss." Well, then why didn't you speak up? And
right. The other thing, you see some of these, and I tell jocks, I talk to the jocks, and some of the kids, they don't even know who I am. That's how many years I haven't been up in jocks' rooms on a regular basis. But also, I tell these kids, and I heard some talk about horses being loaded in the start and gate, and it's, why do they persevere with some of these horses? They should just scratch them, in different other areas or different parts of the world in Europe. They scratch them immediately if they don't load. But you know what? I tell jocks, if a horse is giving you problems in the gate, come back and tell the man. Don't act like, well, I had somebody handle him. We got off all right. No, I had somebody handle him. We were lucky we got off all right. This horse needs to school a few mornings. And you go over there and you stand him. And the difference of making horses good in the starting gate is the morning work that you do with them.
Sure.
Not what goes on in the afternoon, because they're ready to rock and roll and they're cranked up. And if they get in the habit of going over to the gate and being halfway ballistic, it ain't going to get better by not trying to change that attitude of letting them blow their cork in the afternoon by just running them. What you have to do, but you have to come back and tell the man. You know how many times I've come back and told the man, listen, listen, I hate to use my own name because I've been around 100 years and people will show me a little more respect maybe than somebody else. But I'll come back and say, listen, so whoever been, this horse needs to stand. In fact, let me come to the barn, and I'll stand him a few mornings till we get this horse standing properly in the gate where he's not trying to lean from side to side, jump up and down, kick, do everything wrong in there and just hope he gets off good. We'll stand him a few mornings, and that will expose him to an idea that, man, every time I come over here, it isn't bang, the whistle goes off and I gotta go, the bell rings and go. They come over there with the idea they know how to break, they're going to be alert in the afternoon, but they have a little bit of calm activity that they can relate to because they've come over there a few mornings and they've stood in that starting gate and they get a little more relaxed. And the greatest thing in the world is you walk a horse in the gate and he blows up underneath you. And he's not falling asleep, but he takes a deep breath. He walks in there, and you got his head pointed into the V of the doors. And a lot of times you don't need a man with him because he's not sideways and kicking and all, you know, up and down. And he stands there, and he looks down the racetrack, and he's ready to explode when them doors just move. And then the bell goes off. The doors open. The bell goes off. He's gone. But he was standing balanced in the gate. He wasn't all forward with too much weight in front. He wasn't, the worst thing is, to be leaning back with all his weight on his haunches of his hind end and sometimes got his ass jacked up on the back doors and he can't even move forward to break out of there because he's leaning too far back. You know, when a horse is standing properly in the gate, they're balanced, they've got equal weight all the way around, and they're usually not touching the gate on any side, shoulder or ass end or anyway, any place. But that's so important, because who wants to spot the competition lengths leaving there? You know, that's what, when I compare it to baseball players, and this is a jockey point of view, and it has nothing to do really with baseball. But I watch baseball players never swing at the first pitch, and it's a beautiful strike. And I'm thinking, well, why do you limit yourself to two strikes and I'm out? Because you gave the first one away. But that's different. Baseball is a different game than horse racing. But I always look at that, and I'm thinking, that's like me having a horse standing sideways in the gate and saying, oh, it's all right. We'll spot him a couple lengths leaving here. Don't want that to happen. But baseball and horse racing are two different sports. But it really does. I always think of that when I watch a pitcher go up there, throw strikes, the first pitch to the 5, 6, 7 players, and they stand there looking at it. And I'm saying, swing at the thing. You know, if you miss it, it's one thing. But it's a strike anyway. But that's the jockey racehorse mentality. I guess I'd never make it in baseball.
Well, Tony, you made it in horse racing, and as always, helpful, insightful discussions. I appreciate it.
I appreciate what you do, and I'm going to turn you on right now because you know what? I was running around here doing things. I got one kid in camp, basketball camp of all camps, right? He's going to probably be just a little bigger than me, but he's a basketball player. And then I got the other one in an extended school year, and I just came home, and the phone rang, and Casey was on the line. I says, you know what, Case? I almost forgot it was Thursday, and this not having work to do every morning is really not good for me because, you know, the track's been closed at parks for renovation.
Right.
There's no racing to the end of the month, and I'm not getting on any horses, and I should have had you on listening. But you take care, Steve. Thanks. Keep up the good work. And you've got a dedicated listener in Tony Black.
Well, Tony, everybody loves the visits and an expertise that is unrivaled. Tony Black, everybody. Let's take a break here.
About 15 to the top. Steve Haskin. And Steve's been making the scene here at Saratoga. He's had all kinds of fun, and they're spending one more night in town. They'll be back later at the end of the month. But let's check in with Steve. I missed him last night. By the time we got to the Washington Inn for the old friends, kind of the wrap-up of the old friends party, Steve had just left, and apparently he captivated the attendees. It was a big success, again, for Michael Blowen. It was fun to talk to him yesterday and see him last night. Steve Haskin joins us. Plenty to do yet. Scratches are up, too. Really, considering the off-the-turf, things pretty much held together. The carryover feels pretty approachable. It's not easy, but that first leg, the 32 claimer that's off the turf going to the main, that's actually a better race than you would think. Then you've got four straight that are that are very competitive, including the stake and that high-level allowance. And then a kind of a quirky nightcap, filly and mare, three ups. Six are left to run. And that's going to take some deciphering, I think, who might be okay on the main track. Steve Haskin, though, joins us next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's dancing behind movie scenes, behind movie scenes. Sadi Rani, she's the one that keeps the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life. Grim Fool Asher on the 45. Well, it's Grim Fool Asher on the 45.
We're back at the races. About 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Get to spend 25 minutes with Steve Haskin, who I think another 15 minutes, Steve, I think you have to register to vote in Saratoga County.
Yes. I'm voting for, you know, and I already know who I'm voting for. I'm voting for Steve Bick for mayor.
Easy. I met the mayor. We had the fundraiser for Captain a couple of weeks ago, and the mayor was there. I don't want to. I'm on good terms with her.
You're on good terms with everybody.
Well, almost. I just missed you last night. Tina and I, we were at the Engordo DeVoe party, and then came over to the Washington Inn, and you guys had just left.
Oh yeah, we just left because we had dinner reservations. So we were there for quite a while. Bought a couple of books from Dagmar, who I'd met at Churchill Downs, and met a lot of people. We met a lot of people. I didn't. So what time did you get there?
I don't know. 7. I don't even know. 7:40, give or take. 7?
Oh yeah. I think we were gone by like 10 or 7, something like that. Oh,
okay, so Michael made it sound like you literally were ships passing in the night.
Michael loses track of these things. There's so many people there.
It was good. It was really nice.
It was great.
I had never been there.
I tell you one thing, by the way. I don't know if they replenished it, but you missed the most incredible eggplant pizza.
Ooh.
From Mamma Mia. Oh my God, was that good? That was sensational. And plus they had a vegetarian pizza. So that was good. That was a great little appetizer for us.
But where'd you go?
That was as good an eggplant pizza as I've ever had.
Well, I'm sure that Michael set the menu with you in mind, because you're his favorite vegetarian.
Well, there was plenty for the meat eaters too. So there was sausages and meatballs and everything, and usual
nice
stuff there. But it was a very nice spread. A lot of people showed up. Any dignitaries there while you were there?
I don't know. I only met, I don't know, maybe met 5 or 6 people that were on hand, and a couple people that kind of recognized but don't necessarily know by name. It was really nice. I'm glad we had Michael on yesterday, and I wanted to make sure we swung by and at least paid tribute to all the dedication involved in what has become one of the great success stories.
I've never been to Washington Inn before. I mean,
it's really nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I didn't realize that Dagmar was married to Joe Steiner, and he got a very cute little child that was there, and that was kind of cool.
Very nice. Very nice. I saw Joe, absolutely. Well, Steve, you've had this terrific week, and you're part of festivities virtually on a nightly basis or an afternoon basis with Rhoda and Avi's.
Well, let's put it this way: when you stay with the Friedbergs, you become part of the Saratoga social scene. So
exactly,
we go out with them to the finest restaurants, and we go to a lot of the major functions, and we become somebody. Until we go back home again. then we go back to our life of peasantry.
Yeah, listen to you. The party, the thing tonight, it really sounded nice. And it's a private function, but what a nice gesture by Sal Kuhlman.
It's actually tomorrow night.
Okay, I've lost track.
Yeah, I texted Saul. I asked him what time it was. He says 7 o'clock, and then I get an email reminder about the party. It says that's at 7:30. So I have no idea what's going to start. But it is a really great gesture because it's a dinner, and it's basically invited everybody who had anything to do with Lady Eli. You know, from the grooms, the blacksmiths, the hot walkers, the assistants, to the bloodstock agents, anybody. So I was fortunate because every year I covered the Breeders' Cup Classic, you know, for Blood Horse. But they started to have a new policy where they would have some of the riders double up. So I would cover the Classic on Saturday, and on Friday they gave me the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf to cover. And when Lady Eli won, you know, that's, you know, when at San Anita they had that beautiful pavilion, you know, mm-hmm. right by the tunnel as you go in. So I'm up there waiting, and I said, I don't know who these people are. You know, who's Saul Kuhlman and Jay Hanley? I have no clue. But, you know, it's like everything else. You go, you talk to people, you learn their story, and you come up with, some backstory. So I met Saul Kuhlman and his wife, and Jay Hanley and his wife, and found out the whole story. So I actually, you know, I covered the first race, and we became very friendly. Stay friendly with both of them. And, you know, one of our highlights when we come to Saratoga is we meet up with Saul because his house is like, you know, six or seven houses down from the Friedberg's house. And we would meet, you know, walk down to his house and get in his golf cart and go visit his 200 horses that he has scattered all over the backstretch. The thing is, Jay Hanley got him interested in horse racing because Jay built Saul's house, in Nantucket, and they became friendly. And he asked him, he says, do you want to get involved, in horse racing? You know, put up a certain amount of money, and you know, go partnership, and they formed a stable. And they went out and they bought like three horses, and one of them was Lady Eli. Next thing you know, they were Breeders' Cup winner, and Saul became absolutely, totally hooked, you know, and he became insatiable having, you know, own parts of horses. So he'd get in on the bottom floor, you know, horse would break his maiden, or sometimes the horse is a proven horse, and he'll get in. Sometimes the horse will sell as a yearling, and somebody will need a partner, and, you know, Saul has become the George Jessel of partners. I mean, he's become the spokesman of partners. So he's partners with so many different owners, and he's involved with so many different horses, and he's absolutely loving it. He's a hedge fund broker, so he's used to the action. So he likes having a piece of this and a piece of that. So he's been in the game for about 4 years now or so with Lady Eli. 3-4 years, he's triple crown winners, and he owns part of Justify, and he's got a Catholic Boy and Mind Your Biscuits and Midnight Bisou and Monomoy Girl. I mean, he's won everything this year, and he's found a permanent home in the winner's circle. Every time you look up, it's Saul leading a horse in. So he's having a great time. He's so passionate. He's so enthusiastic about it. And it's just great. It's just great hanging out with him. And you know what? I think he basically revolutionized it, because ever since he started doing that, everybody's partnering now. I mean, nobody owns horses by themselves anymore. Everybody's getting involved. You know, Windstar is now partnering with somebody, you know, and they got with the China Horse Club and SF Racing, and Stone Street is partnering with the Clips, and I mean, everybody's partnering up with everybody, and when you see these horses, the million-dollar yearlings, a lot of them are partners rather than investing all that money on one horse. But, you know, Saul got in on Justify after he broke his maiden, so he obviously has, you know, the right people looking at horses because, you know, he has no background in horse racing. He's just loving it. And now he's got all these different stables, you know, Monomoy Stable and Mattaket and Head of Plains, Sheep Pond, you know, which is the original one. And it's just great. I mean, it's just great watching it. You know, the game's changed a lot. No more of the Alfred Vanderbilts and C.B. Whitney's and Darby Dan Farm and, basically the only one you have left is Phipps, and even Phipps is now, they partner up with Stuart Channing on almost everything.
Well,
so the game has changed a lot.
Well, I'm putting in the obligatory reference and note to Mrs. Weber, who celebrated the 50th
She's partnered with some horses, but she's like the last of a dying breed of somebody who's races homebreds, and she's an old fashioned owner. And I always tell the stories about her. She cares so much about her horses. I tell you, one of my favorite stories ever. She had a filly running in a grass stake. What was her name? What was the filly she had? Voodoo Dancer, was it?
No, that's we got Voodoo Song right now. Might have been Voodoo Dancer.
She had a filly. It was Bill Mott trained her.
Yeah,
and she ran in a stakes race, one of the New York grass stakes, and she ran a good race. I think she finished third, maybe second or third or whatever. And I covered the race, and I did my interviews afterwards. And I parked on the back stretch, and so I got in my car and I was driving. And it was dark out, and basically nobody around. And I drive by Bill Mott's barn, and it's completely empty except for one person. Charlotte Weber is in there at this filly stall talking to her. And I said, "Wow, that's the greatest thing. That's the greatest thing I've ever seen from an owner." I was so impressed that she was back at the barn, that filly got gotten beat. It's almost like she was consoling her and trying to make her feel better. It was great. It really was. But she's a she's one of the old fashioned, classy owners. And the key thing, she knows how to lose. That's the key thing of a lot of, a lot of the people in racing right now. They love to win. They're great winners, but when they lose, oh, God, it's a disaster. I can't believe it. I haven't won a race in 3 days. I haven't won a stakes in a week. But she knows it. The old-time owners, you lose, you go on to the next one. It's just part of the game. In the big handicap races, I always remember what John Neighborhood would always tell me. They put 134 on my horse. Well, fine. You get beat, I'll get weighed off the next time. That's the philosophy. You look at her. I'm reading. By the way, I highly recommend. I don't come on here and recommend a lot of books. I'm about three quarters of the way through a book called Out of the Clouds: The Story of Hirsch Jacobs.
Yeah.
And Stymie. Oh my God, what a great book! That's as good a racing book as I've read. So much history in there. Damon, and the things you learn about Izzy Bieber. You talk about Runyon-esque characters. Damon Runyon himself was a Runyon-esque character. And he plays a huge part in the book. He knew Hirsch Jacobs very well. But, Al Jolson's in there, and J. Edgar Hoover, and Al Capone. And it's a whole history of the early 1900s and Prohibition, and all these characters, these racetrack characters. I mean, it's phenomenal reading. And then the whole story, of course, of him claiming Stymie and became the leading money-winning horse of all time. He revolutionized the game by breeding, owning, and training his own, horses. But just reading about him, he started out pigeon racing in New York, New York City. He raised pigeons, and he implemented with his knowledge of pigeons, training pigeons, to training racehorses. But just so many great stories. One of the ones I just read was that he became friendly with J. Edgar Hoover, who used to get his racing tips, by the way, from Frank Costello. If anybody doesn't know, Frank Costello was the Don. He was the Vito Corleone of the Mafia for several years. But he got to know Hirsch Jacobs very well, and they had lunch together. And one day, having lunch, J. Edgar Hoover said, "Well, I just want you to know, you have absolutely no idea how many grooms and exercise riders that you hired that were that we planted in there to investigate you." So, and that's what the FBI was doing. Because he was winning at such an incredible rate, that and this was the advent of a lot of drug. Heroin was a big drug, and caffeine, and there was a lot of drugs in America at that time. So they investigated her shakers because of his winning percentage. He'd win so often and did so well that they would plant grooms and exercise riders to investigate him. And he says, you know, you came up perfectly clean. And, you know, Herb Shakers was the type of trainer, didn't believe in working his horses. He said, well, am I going to work him for nothing when I can run him to get purse money? So he used to run him a lot and train him very little, and wound up owning and training and breeding some of the great, great racehorses of all time. But I highly, highly recommend this book. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, and we got the copy. It came right as Triple Crown was getting started, and so it kind of got lost in the shuffle. You know, we got the preview copy, and then the final copy. So I'm glad you brought it up. You know, it's funny.
Definitely read it. I guarantee it, you will enjoy this book from start to finish. Well, at least start to three quarters. I'm sure start to finish. You know, but I mean, it's just great. I mean, you talk about characters. The most Runyon-esque character there is was Izzy Bieber. I only remember him when I first got interested in racing. You know, he was an old man. He was like in his 80s or something. So, you know, it was Hirsch Jacobs and Isidore Bieber. And they were partners for forever. But Izzy Bieber was like the biggest gambler of his time. And he was a tough, tough kid. And he would fight all these gangsters and heavyweight champions and beat the crap out of them. I mean, he was a tough guy. And you just don't associate it, because I only remember the elderly Isidore Bieber. But I remember all the horses they owned. The horse called Wise Exchange, I remember, from 1968. But I mean, it's just a story about him. Oh, and then you know, Kleberg, who had Stymies first. You know, a lot of background material on him. What a character he is. His background is amazing. What he built, Bob Kleberg. I mean, there's so much history in this book. So definitely, really, you will love it.
Nice. And you know, you mentioned the training versus racing, and this is a topic that it deserves plenty of attention. The conversation I had with John Sheriffs last night, actually, Sheriffs was telling us about reading Galen Fox about his training regimen, and some of the things that John was trying to extract, Steve, from Galen Fox's treatment. And what he talked about was a little surprising and a little bit of a flip from what we think of today in terms of getting horses to, when they're working, to finish fast. And Fitzsimmons didn't do that. He had them go fast early, but even if they tired late, It didn't bother him, because he was in the process of stretching them out and would have them go longer under the same practice. And John was a little surprised by that, and he was trying to figure out, you know, how it could be incorporated in, you know, in today's training. And frankly, anybody that reads workout reports, Mike Maker seems to work his horses that way.
That's interesting. I wonder if Lucas did, because, you know, Mike Maker was Lucas's assistant for a while. But, you know, listen, the old-fashioned trainers, now, those trainers were hard on their horses, and they would, you know, they would weed through the horses that couldn't stand up to the training. You know, Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, Max Hirsch, John Gaver, all these guys. And that's the way Bob Baffert trains right now. And, you know, Bob Baffert, he works his horses. You know, if he can't stand up to it, you know, then you never hear these horses. But the ones that stand up to that training, those are the ones that start winning derbies and triple crowns.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with John last night, Steve. Heard some stories that I've not heard before.
John is such a great historian, and he John is great. How long is he here for?
They left this morning or today. They're heading back to Del Mar.
Okay. Well, they have a beautiful, well, them and David have this beautiful home right near the Saratoga harness track, and
right.
Dottie decorated that home so, oh my God, it's just so beautiful. You know, it's not a big, it's like a townhouse type of home, but she really did an incredible job decorating it. It's a great, great house. But, you know, remember John was here for a few years,
but
it was tough. You know, it was tough winning races here. John was a historian.
They enjoyed the experience.
At Belmont, his barn at Belmont was John Neighbor's old barn. You know, the walking ring was actually a tartan walking ring, and you can barely see it. It's still, the remnants of it are still there. But John put up all of Dr. Faker's photos and records on his old stall. He found out what stall he was in. But he was absolutely thrilled, because as a historian, to be in the old tartan stable barn with Dr. Faker.
That is cool. Ask him about the Gallant Fox experiment. He's trying to duplicate. Well, you know, Bill Hirsch puts out every time there's a Triple Crown try, he's got that
stuff. Yes.
Yeah, that record. The assault.
Yeah, all of assault's workouts.
Exactly. And it's fascinating.
His workouts are incredible. How many times that horse worked, and some of the times of these workouts. You know, back then, you know, you worked horses a lot different than you did now. I remember when John Neighbor worked, you know, Dr. Faker, when he came out for his first start as a 4-year-old, he worked him in the afternoon between races. He worked him in company, and put John Rotz up with him just to give him the feel of the horse. And John Rotz didn't know what to expect, and Dr. Faker worked 5 furlongs at 56 and 4. So, you don't see that. You know, now 4 horse works 58 before a race, by the way. Oh, that's it. He's got no shot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, Steve, I appreciate this, and it's been
yes.
fun to have
it's
you.
It's been great. Yeah,
we've
got a lot of company here. They're all out on the back porch, so they want me to say hi to them. So, hi everybody out there. Hi everybody out there in Friedberg Land.
Well, race day shaping up, and are you coming out at all today, or what's your?
No, actually, we're gonna probably go to the backstretch in the afternoon. That's a good time to go to the backstretch. I want to take Joan and go see. We'll meet up with Chad Summers and go see Mind Your Biscuits. I fall in love with that horse. That horse is just
very cool.
He can do everything, that horse. I don't care first or second where he finishes, but I mean, for a horse to finish, second in the Breeders' Cup Sprint and in the Whitney is amazing.
And the Met.
And the Met, just get beaten the Met and win two Dubai Golden Shaheens, Malibu. I mean, it's unbelievable, the races he runs in. Doesn't matter the distance, doesn't matter the track condition, doesn't matter anything. He's right there every race. I love that horse.
He's unique talent. There's no doubt. It's really been a pleasure to watch, and it's why there's been such a groundswell of appreciation for him.
Oh, for sure. And you got to remember, too, by the way, is that Rick Violet had no plans to run Diversify in the Wood with the Whitney. He was still going to wait for the Woodward. The horse was doing so well that he ran, and the race set up perfectly for him, and he ran an unbelievable race where nobody was going to beat him. When the horse breaks the way he did and runs the kind of fractions he did early and the fractions he did late, you just can't beat a horse like that. And here's Mind Your Biscuits would have won the Whitney if Rick Violet had stuck to his original plan. And it looked like he was going to get past, at the end of the race. And he dug in and he held on for second. And he ran a winning race. I mean, and he galloped out ahead of everybody at the end, too. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know what this horse is incapable of doing. Let's put it that way.
Agreed.
I love having a horse like that around.
People asked leading into Saturday a lot of questions. You know, what do you expect from your biscuits? I think that I said repeatedly, you know, he's going to try, and that he won't stop running. And frankly, in that group, that looked good enough for a board hit, and that's the way I approached it. I mean, it seemed it's been made very clear. This is one of those horses that. Yeah, okay. Is he up against it going the mile and eighth? A little bit, but you're going to get all the try you'd want out of him. So
yeah, and he adjusts. How many horses can adjust their running style? You put him in a sprint, he's going to come from 15 lengths out of it. You put him at a mile and eighth, and he's going to be running 4 lengths out of it. I mean, normally when a sprinter, a closing sprinter, does that, they have no closing punch at all.
That's
it takes
right.
their closing punch away when you stretch them out. But he still comes. He still comes running. Yeah, you know. I mean, it's just. And
that
we don't
special.
Even. The thing is, we don't even know if he's going to be running in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, or the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Well, Dirt Mile feels like a natural.
That
the one turn Dirt Mile.
But
yeah.
And, you know, Chad likes to take chances sometimes, and you know he hasn't discounted the Classic. You know, it'll. He's going to run him in a two-turn prep race, and we'll see how he does. And he'll decide whether he wants to stretch him out or drop
him
back.
Yep.
And this is, the good thing he has going from this year, which he should take advantage of, and from my opinion, is that he's got a one-turn mile this year for the Breeders' Cup.
Exactly. That's,
not like a phony dirt mile that you have at
exactly. Exactly. Steve, I appreciate it, as always, and we inch closer. Alabama next week. Red Ruby is going to miss the Alabama, that news.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. What happened
yeah.
to her?
She's got a little splint, splint bone that's bothering her. So she needs a little bit of time. So little, we lose one, but it'll still come together. And Travers continues to percolate. Toward the highlight of the meet, although there's been plenty of highlights through now.
Yeah, you just hate to hear this. You know, when horses are coming up to a race, you know, the horse that that Avian Rota bought, Nicodemus, that they bought, who ran up second to Hofburg, he was going to go to the Travers, and you know, he got hurt. He's out for a while, so they're going to have to rest him up. For a while, but you know, they're obviously looking forward to being part of the Travers scene, but they'll have, listen, he's only run 3 times, so they'll have a hell of a 4-year-old, and he's a beautiful horse. I went to go see him. He's a beautiful, classy horse, you know, Candy Ride. He's got a good future, but yeah, you just hate to see these horses get hurt. You know, Red Ruby, who knows how good she could have been, or how good she will be. You know,
well, it's just it's a splint. I mean, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's
right. That'll... Yeah, that's what I said. How good she will be when she comes back. But
yeah, she'll be fine.
I'm just saying, not that the injury is going to take away from her ability, but we just don't know what her ability is. And hopefully, the Alabama was going to show how she stacks up against the.
Right.
You know, against the top fillies. I mean, there's some really good ones out there, right? There's some really good 3-year-old fillies.
Well, when you go over, Steve, swing by Siaka and take a look at our Looking at Lucky while you're doing that.
Oh, for sure, right. Well, no, wait, right. What's the name? Oh, Kid Chocolate.
Kid Chocolate.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know where his barn is. It's right hidden right there.
That's he's in the second set, and kind of in the middle. Connie will show you Gary's assistant.
Yeah, terrific. I'll definitely go check him out.
All right, and if I'm well, you text me when you're going, and I'll, depending on where I am.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. Very good.
Excellent, Steve Haskin. Everybody who's having a lot of fun here at Saratoga this summer, and. Had the baby in and daughter and son-in-law, and it's been a pretty festive Saratoga summer for the Haskins. Let's take a break. We're going to catch up with Dick Powell. I want to get Dick's in-person view. You can read his view at Twin Spires. kind of the meat so far as we approach the halfway point. Scratches are out, as I told you, and that last leg of this pick six is going to be a little thorny. I don't think any of them can win. I don't know. We still got to figure that out. And then we'll talk to Rich Ang, and I want Rich to put together a super high five play for the big carryover forged last night at Del Mar with the $40 winner. The $40 winner that John White gave you on a platter on Tuesday. Back after this, Dick Powell.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.